for salmon, and it's supposed to be double what it was last year. Seeing some positive things happen, and you know, that also equates to higher numbers of tourists coming down here.
And the fisheries are exciting for me. I think we get a lot of the negativity of regulations that go on. The big part of our story is we are still the halibut capital of the world. Our fleet is still the largest. And in July, you can't find a seat. So I think we really need to be telling that story. If you're in Anchorage, you still need to fish in Homer, because this is where the halibut come from.
Right. And in terms of fishing, like, is there... I don't know, is there a noticeable correlation? I don't know who wants to take this, but is there a noticeable correlation between when the fishing is down and the tourism numbers? Because people are booking those trips, I mean, years in advance. And so there is somewhat of this lag time between what the regulations are going to be set, you know, in come December and in January for halibut, or, you know, the forecast coming out for salmon in early spring. You know, what are going to be some of the... Is there a lag time between those two?
So definitely, you know, what we see with the fish on the Kenai River is that here we are in April, you know, with our season, you know, almost booked. And, you know, if Fish and Game feels that, you know, that there's not enough fish coming, they'll close it down. We've seen it before, you know, and then we're stuck trying to, you know, juggle what do we do with our customers and where do we go.
And for the customers that, you know, you have to make that unfortunate call to, and you have to say, hey, you know, due to regulations, are they understanding most of the time, or do you potentially lose a customer that might not return in the future?
It's very few that actually cancel a trip. Usually we got some kind of an alternative, you know, whether we're going to do a fly out or we're going to do upriver trout, you know, we're going to do something.
And actually had a great experience with that. I had family up. So again, we've got family travel. We fished with Angler's Lodge out of Sterling, and they said, you know, we might have to, you know, kings are closed. And we said, we don't care about kings. We want to fish. We're not necessarily catching, but we went out for silvers, and it was a great day. So there are, you know, alternative species. Kings are is the sexy name, but there are great fishing opportunities.
Right. And I wanted to talk about some broader trends in the tourism industry in recent years. And Jillian, when we were speaking yesterday, you mentioned there's typically an end of the season report that's put together by the McDowell Group. And can you explain some of the trends that we've been seeing in recent years on a more broad scale in tourism? I know you mentioned cruise growth, but what else have we been seeing?
Yeah, like I had said, thank you, that the cruise growth, because about half of our visitors are arriving on cruise ships, is really helping drive a lot of our overall growth. So in the last 10 years, summer visitation has grown 27%. We've just had that many more people coming up. And it's not only on cruise. We've also seen more people coming up on highway and ferry. And air travel in particular has grown quite a bit. So there's more flights in and out of Alaska now, partly to to help facilitate those one-way cruisers that cruise up and then travel around the state a little bit, and then they need to fly home. And in winter, we've seen a 33% increase in growth, actually, over the last 10 years, which is really substantial for that market.
Right. In terms of the summer growth in the cruise growth, are we seeing visitors kind of transfer from that independent traveler to that cruise industry, or are we just... or, you know, to getting on cruise boats instead, or just has the independent traveler been decreasing while the cruise ships are more gaining some more of those customers?
Yeah, I don't know if there's necessarily been a shift from a person necessarily being an independent traveler then becoming a cruise traveler, but there's definitely been a shift in the market share of how there's more cruising is just more popular way right now to travel to Alaska. And as I mentioned earlier, cruising globally is just growing substantially, and there's just more capacity worldwide, and a lot of companies and ships are recognizing that Alaska is a really great destination to bring those visitors and sell more trips.
Right. And you mentioned a 27% growth in summer visitation. Is that growth mostly being made up by the cruise ships?
It is in the last few years, but in general, I think just more and more people are traveling around the world. You hear a lot about the growing middle class from all sorts of developing countries. In particular, the one that we talk about the most is China, and they're definitely driving a lot of our international growth in visitation. And that's a really great market for Alaska because it is close enough by in Asia, and those travelers come in both the summer and in the winter time. So they're really supplementing a lot of businesses that are able now to stay open year-round to serve those customers.
And if you are just joining us, you are tuned to KBBI, and you're listening to The Coffee Table. And today in the studio, we have KBBI board member and Homer Chamber of Commerce Executive Director Debbie Speakman, Alyeska Farms and Nanilchuk Charters owner Mike Flores. And on the line, we have Jillian Simpson, Vice President of the Alaska Travel Industry Association. And we're talking about the upcoming tourist season and the tourist economy here in the state. And Jillian, you mentioned China, and we talked about this a little bit. That seems to be a growing market share for the Alaska tourist industry. But there are some challenges coming along with that. Are most of those visitors coming in the winter? And can you explain some of the challenges of getting them here in the summertime?
Sure, yeah. I would say definitely more of them are coming in the wintertime. It's just more convenient as far as booking a trip. It seems that Chinese travelers like to have a much shorter booking and planning window for when they are planning their trips, even long-haul trips. And that works when they're going to other destinations like L.A. or New York or Florida, where there's just a lot of capacity. There's a lot of hotel rooms and there's a lot of tours, and it can just be accommodated really easily. But Alaska's busiest season in the summertime. It's a shorter window for opportunities, and it's just when the major volume of our visitors are coming to the state, and so there's just less capacity. And so typically our visitors will start planning a trip about 8 months in advance, and then the bookings are happening on average about 5 months in advance before they come, whereas the Chinese booking window is just much shorter. So by the time they decide they want to come up in the summer, it's just a lot more expensive, and there's just a lot less available at that time, whereas in the winter, neither of those factors are as detrimental. We do have more capacity in the winter time, and so it's not a deterrent to book later and have a shorter window to come over here.
Sure. And we do have a caller on the line. John, you are on the coffee table. Go ahead with your question.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for the call. Winter tourism is an area that could be expanded upon tremendously. Homer has, three very well-kept cross-country ski trails. We have the Homer Rope Toe. We've got the Hockey. We've got Winter Kings. And most of the emphasis in the Homer tourist guide is summer. And if we expanded on our tourist guide and had a well-put-together winter section, I think we'd have results. Thanks.
All righty. Thank you for your question, John. And Debbie, do you want to go ahead and talk about that?
I would love to. John, thank you. You are one of our people. So we all live in Homer because we love it, and year-round it's pretty spectacular, and winter especially. And we have been talking to groups like the Hockey Association, looking at the cross-country trails. And the visitor guide is kind of a different conversation just based on how people plan their trip and what they're looking for. But winter travel is huge for us, and where other destinations are investing in big properties and various tours, we want to partner with those folks and talk about Homer's story. So we are right now correlating a lot of partnerships, and that's what it takes. We have a limited marketing budget. We are a small rural community, and our marketing dollars don't match up to the million. Anchorage has over $1 million marketing budget, and ours. Now, while the city does invest with us, we do have a small membership. So getting that, we need partnerships to increase our reach. And so that's what we really are talking about, is working with these other groups who have great content for marketing. That's everyone from social media, TripAdvisor, websites, and the conversation of why Homer is where you should spend some of your winter dollars.
Right. And it looks like our phone line accidentally dropped Jillian there. So we'll take just a small break. You're tuned to The Coffee Table here on KBBI Homer AM 890. Thank you. And we are back here on KBBI Homer AM 890, and you're listening to The Coffee Table. And if you are just joining us, we are talking about the upcoming tourist season. In the studio, I'm joined by KBBI board member and Homer Chamber of Commerce Executive Director Debbie Speakman, Alyeska Farms and Nanilchuk Charters owner Mike Flores. And on the line, we have Jillian Simpson. We lost her for a little bit. She's the Vice President of the Alaska Travel Industry Association. And I want to remind listeners, you can join the conversation by calling 235-7721 or by emailing info@kbbi.org. Please do include your name if you're emailing a question. And we just had a caller ask about the winter tourist tourism attractions here in Homer. And I know it's been a focus, at least on the Kenai Peninsula, to kind of sell the shoulder season, but the winter season can have a lot of difficulties. And you mentioned marketing dollars is one of those challenges. But I imagine it's also a battle for in-state folks to get them down here in the winter.
Yes, it is a battle, again, because there's just so many things going on. But if we can talk about the 20 to 30 degrees warmer and our beautiful beach, that's a great one. And then the other aspect is we do have a lot of educational opportunities. We've got hotels that are close in town to the college. So Marine Trades is a big draw for folks to come down. And so we not just have the recreation, but we have education. And then on top of that, we have relaxation. Lots of spas. Our hospital is great. You can come get cancer treatments. We've got bed and breakfast that can help you with limited mobility for folks who are coming down for treatments. But there's spas, the food down here, you can't beat. So we've got a great trifecta of reasons for folks to come down here in the winter.
Sure. And Mike, did you have something to add on this?
Chime in on that. Last month at the March ATIA meeting, they were talking about the trend for winter tourism, and Alaska Red was talking about, 28% up, for the last 30 days. And the Heritage Lodge was also up 50% year to date for the wintertime. So we've kind of embraced that, and we've come up with a marketing plan, and we're going to open one of our facilities next year for 30 days in late February, March, and start off with Iditarod and then bring them down the peninsula and do more ecotourism stuff for about a 30-day period and try it out. And
sure. And you say one of your facilities, like, are you talking about a facility up in Anchorage or lodging? Or
no, we have two lodges on the peninsula. We have Nanilchuk Charters, and then we have another one called Soaring Eagle Lodge. It's on the bluff, and it's really pretty. It's oceanfront, and we'll open that facility for 30 days.
Okay. And are other businesses dipping their toes into the water, trying to kind of potentially attract some of these wintertime folks?
There are. Lands End Resort does some getaway packages that include lodging and dinner and things like that. And we do have folks who are definitely looking at partnerships with companies in Fairbanks or guiding companies out of Anchorage. I know Salmon Berry Tours is one that I've loved to work with and looking at trying to add on to what they're already doing. So if they're doing dog sledding or glacier tours by helicopter or plane, how can we marry that with our products? Because we have a different product to offer, whether it's fishing or fat tire biking. And just those partnerships are key, again, because that way we have a more marketing spread. And that's why we invest with ATIA. And thank you, Jillian, for all the work that you guys do in China and German-speaking Europe with your dwindling budget.
And Jillian, you mentioned winter growth as well in terms of tourism. Do we know where a lot of that's going in the state for winter tourism?
Yeah, that's a great question. Certainly, I think the original driver of winter tourism is the aurora. There's just something really special about it. We're the only place in the United States when you can experience it. It's very magical. It's part of the natural wonders that Alaska has to offer. So that's certainly the hook. But then when you really take a deeper dive, I mean, if somebody's going to make the commitment to actually come to Alaska, they want to do all the other activities that the destination has. And so glaciers, seeing our mountains, seeing our wilderness and our wide open spaces, experiencing the things that are unique to here, really are part of the overall package for both summer and winter.
And I know the aurora is a big attraction for some of those folks coming from China, but are folks from the Lower 48 coming up as well? I know that they make up most of our visitors from out of state.
Yes. So really, I mean, in general, everything is the vast majority of our visitors are from the Lower 48, and yes, the Aurora is the draw for them. The other thing that we have seen, which is, it's wonderful, Mike, that you're going to be opening up in February and March. That's a great addition to what we're able to offer, is working around that time frame where it's lighter, it's a little bit warmer, there's a lot of events going on, so we can capitalize on the Iditarod and Fur Rondi and other events like that to really boost our overall presence and marketing efforts to get people up here.
Sure. And we were talking a little bit about, you know, the cruise industry and the independent traveler. But in general, Jillian, we were talking about yesterday, there's kind of an ideal candidate, at least in terms of American visitors from the lower 48 that you guys are kind of after, and you've even given this ideal customer a persona, if you can kind of explain that.
Sure. So we do have a limited marketing budget, and so we want to make sure that we have identified a very clear target audience and that our message resonates with that audience to ultimately drive a conversion to come to Alaska. And so our target right now is Donna. She's the persona that we have created, and we always keep her in mind as we're developing all of our messaging and marketing materials. She is about 55. Her kids have left home. She has a disposable income, and she wants to travel because she wants to add experiences to her life that'll help shape and give her meaning. And she, right now, where she's living in the lower 48, there's a lot of clutter. There's a lot of messages that she's getting constantly on her phone and on her television, and we want to break through that and say, take a deep breath and come here and relax and enjoy what life is really all about, and we'll make memories here for you in Alaska.
All right, and we do have another caller on the line. Shannon, go ahead. You are on the coffee table.
Hey, good morning. Yeah, this is Shannon. Thanks for covering this topic, and thanks, Debbie and Jillian, for being on. I wanted to speak to specifically the independent travelers, and at the beginning of the show you were talking about sort of the unknown until the numbers come in at the end of the year. So we're in the tourism business. We have the Kachemak Bay Wilderness Lodge across the bay in Shinnepoot, and we cater to high-end independent travelers. And our season is almost fully booked for this summer. But I wanted to point out that typical of lots of seasons, we start out a little slow. The first 2 weeks of June are not completely full, and that's typical for us. And then we're pretty full mid-June through the 1st of September. And I think like a number of other lodges in this part of Alaska, we're a smaller family-owned lodge, and we cater to high-end, all-inclusive. And so our travelers, our independent travelers, a couple hundred clients come through a summer, and we make a really big point to encourage all of our guests to spend a few days in Homer. So our guests come, mostly Americans, some of the lower 48, and they spend a few days in town. We recommend local accommodations. We recommend they go out bear viewing. We recommend they go out on a fishing charter. We recommend nice restaurants in town and art galleries. So our travelers come to Homer, spend a few days, spend quite a bit of money in town, then come and stay with us at the lodge. And we hire all local and we shop local. So we try to make sure that the money stays in town, circulates in town, and that we're supporting the local economy. So I just want to point out the importance of independent travelers and shopping local and hiring local, and that for us it's looking like a really good season, starting out a little slow. But I wonder if you have other information on other lodges around Alaska and if they're booking up with independent travelers too, or maybe you don't know that till the end of the summer. So thanks.
And Aaron, I've got a little bit of insight on that. Sure. Homer is very lucky to have some incredible all-inclusive, and these are high-end lodges. I know Mike is a little bit humble about his, when he talks about his lodge, but it's incredibly gorgeous. And these are folks that are hiring local, and they are encouraging their guests to spend time in Homer. That's why they've invested in building here. The nice thing, and I will talk about Kirsten Dixon and Tucka Bay Lodge. They also have Winter Lake Lodge out on the peninsula. Then that's mostly winter, although they do quite a bit of business in the summer as well. But these are folks that we can partner with. They have great content. They invest in marketing. And so with the Homer Chamber, what we do is is help provide information to their guests and also provide information to their marketing or PR firms and make it a really great partnership. So I know that we have lodges that will bring in, through their public relations folks, they'll bring in visiting media. And we romance those folks. And that means we're taking them to dinner. We're taking them on, you know, private behind the scenes, only locals tours, and spending time with them too, because they have the kind of reach that we couldn't buy if it was available. And if we could, we couldn't afford it.
Sure. And, you know, and Shannon was mentioned the independent traveler, and I know we've talked about this person. I know that's the target for Homer specifically. And Jillian, we're talking about the persona Donna, that mid-50s, woman who's planning the trip for her and her husband to come here to Alaska. You know, in terms of those folks, are they are those the folks that are the independent travelers, or are those the cruise ship folks? Like, what are we? Do we know the difference between where those people are choosing to come here?
Yeah, so Donna is just our generic visitor, whether she's cruise or independent. But the more you kind of slice and dice the type of travel that somebody does, the more specific niches that we can find, whether it's somebody who's more interested in adventure travel or somebody who's more interested in coming in the winter is going to be a little bit younger than Donna, for example. And it just really varies depending, you know, somebody who wants to go to an all-inclusive lodge in Homer compared to, you know, somebody taking just an Inside Passage cruise might be a little bit different. But in general, on average, Donna kind of covers all of them. And we create our marketing campaign that goes out nationally to be able to reach and cover all of those types of travelers in general. Because ultimately we want to inspire people to choose Alaska as a destination and get them to choose it this year.
Sure. And, you know, we've been talking a lot about the cruise industry, and Debbie, I don't know if you want to take this one in terms of Homer does have some cruise ship visits. I believe we're getting 13 this year, if I recall correctly. But we're not a huge destination for cruise ships. And can you explain, like, kind of why that is?
Right. So for cruise lines coming into Homer, and it's a fairly new route, and new as in 10, 15 years. I mean, that's still kind of considered new. And they come through, they hit Kodiak, they hit Homer and Anchorage, and this is a 14-day cruise. Now, by the time they get to Homer, they are not necessarily spending the money on shore excursions. They're not drinking as much, and they're not gambling. So that's the overhead on what's paying for the cruise, because a lot of times they've discounted the berths. So they do need to recover that with a variety of other spending, and that's a majority of that is through shore excursions. Now, we have the opportunity, but getting those folks to get off the boat and spend that kind of money on the excursions is another topic. So now what we're looking at is attracting smaller cruise lines or smaller yachts. We've got a great yacht that we've been romancing for about a couple of years, and they're going to be doing a Whittier or Seward to Homer round, or not round trip, but one way. So they'll fly in on Raven, catch the boat, and they'll spend, you know, 2 to 3 days here before grabbing that yacht, and then they'll go around to Seward and then take the railroad up and then vice versa. And these are perfect for us. These are folks who want a different experience. There are independent travelers who do want to get off the boat and take a Zodiac across the bay and go on a hike. But we would like to see some of the smaller cruise lines, Uncruise, Nat Geo, I'm going to mess up the name, but Lilblad, and Jillian might be able to correct my
name. Lilblad, you're right on, yep.
Okay. So these are the folks that I think would be a perfect fit for us. We do have bear viewing. We have fishing trips that maybe they'd be able to adjust their sailing schedule so they would be able to meet those tides for bear viewing. We could work with Seldovia or the Three Villages and offer opportunities that you wouldn't necessarily get in other places in Alaska. And the great feedback we get from cruise passengers who have now become independent travelers is they've come to Homer because of their short stay here on the cruise ship, and because we still look and feel like Alaska. And we have to thank the Kilchers for a lot of that. They show Alaska very well on their show, and they bring a lot of folks into Homer.
Great. And we do have another caller on the line. Mako, go ahead. You're on the coffee table.
Hi, good morning, and thanks for this program. This is a subject near and dear to my heart. One of the things I learned early in this in the tourism industry is not to go for the whole pie, to pick your slice of the pie and emphasize that. And my big concern is that we tend to go for quantity over quality. And so, you know, I'm really happy that Diane brought up the independent traveler, because that's who I deal with. And my concern is that we will lose the independent travelers if we continue to overload our system with cruise ships. And I guess I'd just like to hear a response about that, that sometimes more is too much. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your call, Marco.
Yeah, I think a great commentary, and I think it's a conversation that's being had globally with so much of an increase in people traveling, whether it's by cruise or even not. I mean, you especially hear about it in a lot of European cities, that there's just a lot of visitors going through there, and we don't want to have a negative impact on those communities. And Southeast is having these conversations right now because of the growth in the cruise lines, the cruise ships that are coming through there, and ATIA is continuing to have those. We're going to be having a cruise summit, actually, at our convention in October, which will be in Juneau. I think what we see in Alaska in particular is that we place as much, if not more, value on the independent traveler. We want people to experience all five regions of the state, and we want them to go to Alaskan-owned businesses. That's the wonderful thing about tourism, is that it's entrepreneurs who are Alaskan, who are making their living, who are supporting other Alaskans, and are able to do that by showing off how wonderful our state is, and it improves our quality of life. 1 in 10 jobs in Alaska are in tourism. Of our membership, I don't know how this works for your membership, Debbie, but in our membership, over half of our members are small businesses that have less than 5 employees year-round. And so that's extremely important to us, to preserve the experience and the quality that the visitor has when they come to Alaska, so they know that they're in it's an authentic Alaskan destination. But we also live here, and we want our communities to thrive and to have that wonderful balance where we can still have our quality of life.
Yeah, and Debbie, you know, in terms of the cruise ship in Moscow, Mako's concerns, is there? I don't know if Homer's really had this conversation quite yet in terms of this idea of capacity. In terms of are we at capacity with the visitors we are already having here, the independent travelers, the RVs and the cruise ships that we do get? Is this a conversation that's been being had here in Homer?
It is to a certain degree. July, we are definitely at max. You can't get a bear viewing. You can't get out fishing. And getting on a water taxi, as Mako can probably ascertain, can be difficult. June, May, August, and more towards the end of August, September, we do get a lot of international, that German-speaking Europe contingency is huge for us. So we haven't had the conversation of capacity, and maybe that's a great conversation to start now as we are looking to build on our marketing. And Mako, I like that you said about quality versus quantity. We used to cast a wide net, and now we have the luxury of analytics. We can put a post out on Facebook, we can put banner ads on a variety of sites, and then we can use those analytics to then refine and direct where our message is. And that's what we're doing right now. We're seeing our website getting a lot of traffic, and we're seeing a lot of our members getting traffic. So what is that look like, and who are these folks who are visiting our website? How long are they staying on it, and then what are they doing afterwards?
Yeah. And, you know, in talking about the cruise industry versus the independent traveler, and Mike, I know that you said your main target is the independent traveler, but we were chatting yesterday, and you said that businesses such as yourself are also looking to tap into this growing cruise market. If you want to kind of explain what are the challenges there for the Kenai Peninsula?
So as a whole for the peninsula, you know, we have to come up with an attraction that, you know, we can sell to the tours, to the cruise bus people, or the cruise industry, and be consistent. So on the fishing side, it's a little hard to do that when we have fluctuations in regulations. So you have to come up with other things. And there's definitely room for entrepreneurs in the peninsula to jump into this. And I think that, you know, if we can come up with quality trips, we shouldn't have any problem bringing people down here.
And it is exciting, especially on the fishing end. Actually, you know, in Waco as well, is when you get on a boat to go fishing, you are not only talking to the captain, you are talking to the owner of that charter. And, you know, over, I would say, 98% of our members, when you walk into a shop here or you look at getting a boat built, you are talking to the owner, and that's pretty special.
Right.
I think the other point to make, too, is that about 40% of our visitors are actually repeat visitors who have been to Alaska before, and that's driven by two factors, one being people that like to come fishing, right? So they come back every year to experience Alaska fishing. And the second is driven by people who came up here first on a cruise and then realized that they wanted to see more and experience more, and they come back as an independent traveler.
Right. And I wanted to remind for listeners who may have just joined us, you are listening to The Coffee Table, and today we're talking about the upcoming tourist season and the tourist economy. In the studio, I'm joined by KBBI board member and Homer Chamber of Commerce Executive Director Debbie Speakman, Alyeska Farms and Nanilchik Charters owner Mike Flores, and on the line we have Jillian Simpson, Vice President of the Alaska Travel Industry Association. And you can join the conversation by calling 235-7721 or by emailing info@kbbi.org. And Mike, in terms of, we've talked about a lot about marketing, both on the statewide scale, the local and regional scale, but for a business such as yourself, trying to attract those independent travelers, or even trying to tap into the buses that are driving some of these cruise ship passengers around the state, how are you trying to target your customers, and how is that a challenge for business owners such as yourself?
So marketing, as everybody knows, is, you know, an evolution. And so when we first started out 30 years ago, it was all trade shows. And we used to do three states on the same week. And we've stopped doing trade shows. We stopped doing print ads for the most part. We still do a fair amount of magazine and we do sports writers. But we really wanted to break into social media about 4 years ago and didn't have very good results at it, you know, because we were hiring companies to do it for us. And then we finally figured out that, you know, it was the personal touch. It was our crews, you know, my employees reaching out to the customers and making contact with them on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And once we figured that out, you know, we started seeing people book, you know, we saw the interaction between employees and customers, and then now we got a huge audience. So sometimes you can't, you know, hire a company to do it for you. You have to do it yourself.
And for, you know, maybe someone just jumping into the tourism business, or someone who is still kind of holding on to those more, I guess, now old fashioned or traditional ways of marketing to customers, going to these trade shows, putting in these print ads, I guess, what would be your advice to them to get started in kind of this new age of marketing?
It's definitely a people business. It's a hands-on, you know, you got to treat them like family and cultivate those relationships. That's what makes it.
Great. And we do have another caller on the line. Devani, you are on the coffee table. Go ahead with your question.
My name is Devani Leonard. Am I talking on the air right now?
Yes.
Okay, great. I'm Devani, and I work at the Independent Living Center with their inclusive recreation program, which is called Trails. And what I would like to add to the conversation, which I'm really excited to hear, and I've just turned on the radio, so I haven't gotten some of the background stuff you've been talking about, is as we interact with the markets for folks wanting to visit Homer, there's a huge market that is not yet much on people's radar, and it's the, at least locally, and it's the market of people traveling who have disabilities. And that's right. The last statistic that I could find on it was that in 2015, that market of people traveling with disabilities is something like, $17 billion annually in the United States, and that's just the travelers with disabilities. That's not their friends and families. And, of course, people who are traveling with a disability are often traveling with friends and families. And Homer is such an easy place to have spectacular experiences without necessarily having to climb a mountain to see the view. I mean, all you have to do is drive into town and your socks are blown off. So we're looking here at the Trails program because we promote inclusive recreation, at what information we can provide to the market of people traveling with disabilities so that Homer appears on their radar and becomes a destination that they want to consider. And one of the things we're doing is developing a campaign, Accessible Homer, where we're putting together a website which will be available through the Peninsula Independent Living Center, where people can find out what sorts of activities they could do while they're here, how accessible those activities are, who they would contact to find out more. And when you promote accessibility for folks with disabilities, you make the community friendlier for people, you know, slow walkers, people with strollers, people who've broken their ankle and are on crutches. It's really a wonderful thing to do for the community. So I just wanted to throw that out. I will probably be trying to get an article in the Homer News fairly soon about our Accessible Homer campaign, and I just can't wait to start interacting with the businesses and talking with them about this market that I think will be a wonderful market for us to invite to the community.
All right. Well, thanks for your call, Devaney.
Okay.
Erin, that makes me really excited. We've talked to Independent Living Center and the Trails Program, and they are really doing great things for Homer and communicating with the Chamber on the different things that are going on, making the pathway down to the fishing hole great, the trail over by the Pratt. I was at K-Bay last week, and Taylor was in with Raiden, who was in a wheelchair, and they were just checking out entrances into businesses. So it is a big conversation, and there is a market for that. We do have to be careful. I grew up with a father with muscular dystrophy, and if you say that you are able to provide services to somebody with limited mobility, you have to be completely, you have to hit all the marks. I's dotted, T's crossed, because if someone does show up and you are not as compliant as they assume, that can be a mark on your business end as well as Homer.
Sure, and I imagine, you know, when we're talking about just limited mobility more generally, it is easy to think you might be accessible, but there are a whole host of varieties of people out there with different versions of limited mobility. It just depends on what you're dealing with.
And I believe the Independent Living Center and Trails are doing a phenomenal job of getting that information. So if businesses do have questions on how to amend their business plan to make it available for those with limited mobility, they would be a great contact.
Great. And, you know, we have about 9 minutes left here, but I did want to touch on one more topic before we went. And Debbie, earlier in the show, you mentioned disruptors. And I think the biggest one is vacation rentals. I know they've been absolutely exploding here in Homer. And can you kind of explain just on a local level how that's affecting the tourism industry?
Absolutely. And I'm going to plug the Chamber's workshop that's coming up on the 24th of April. We've got a session at 12 p.m. and at 5:30 for vacation rental owners. So the disruptors are, if you look at our large lodging sectors, we have the B&B Association. We've got a very large bed and breakfast contingency in town. We've got large lodging options. And they are seeing a different in their booking cycle. And a part of that is the growing number of vacation rentals. And we get the complaint that they're not playing on an equal playing field. So do they have business licenses? Are those required for a small business or a small single-owned business? But the biggest thing is, are they collecting sales tax and are they investing in marketing? I can guarantee 100% of their visitors or their bookings outside of friends and family are coming because of what the Homer Chamber's members are investing in. And that includes our investment in ATIA or Kenai Peninsula Tourism Marketing. But 100%. So we're asking them to help carry the water and help market. It's very important, but there are the disruptors. So how does someone like Nanilchik Charters market to folks who are not coming through a normal chain? They're doing Airbnb. And so that's something we are looking at. TripAdvisor is a huge one. Do we invest in a new website? Well, that might not be the best option right now. Maybe we spend money in TripAdvisor, or maybe we spend more analytics in social media, because right now Donna shows up in Anchorage and ping, she randomly sees an ad for Homer. or sees a picture from Homer. So you have ways that you can guide someone's decision making, but it may not be the website, and it may not be the same as we were doing 2 years ago.
Sure. And we have just a few minutes left, but Mike, I know you have lodges yourself. Have fewer of your charter customers been coming through the lodge? Have you seen this trend of competing with some of these Airbnbs and vacation rentals?
Sure. On the fishing side, what we typically see is people will book their airline and lodging first, and they'll do their attraction last. So when it comes to just straight fishing, they're already taken care of. They've got their airline tickets, they got their lodging done, and now they're looking for us to book a fishing trip. So yeah, we see that on the high-end lodge that we've got. It's an all-inclusive. We book everything.
Okay. And Jillian, I wanted to ask you as well, on the statewide level, are we seeing this competition between the traditional lodging and the vacation rental industry?
Probably, yeah. I mean, what I was going to add to the conversation is that when potential visitors request information from us, we collect a bunch of demographic information from them, and one of them is what kind of accommodations are you interested in. And over half of them want to stay in a lodge or a resort or a cabin. That's the number one choice that they always pick. But 20% of them now are saying that they are interested in a vacation rental or an Airbnb, and that's definitely a newer trend that we're that we've seen in the last couple of years, and of course it's going to have an impact.
Right, and I know that the Chamber is doing its own efforts to try to kind of pull these folks into the fold and get them to invest in marketing to the people that are booking their vacation rentals. Is this something that the ATAA is looking into?
Yeah, I mean, we want people to be able to market through our channels, of course, at any time. But I would definitely say that the bulk of our partnerships with different marketing partners are going to be the more traditional outlets of lodges and hotels and tour activities and bed and breakfasts.
Great. And we have just about 4 minutes left. And I wanted to, are there any other topics we didn't touch on? Kind of final words on the topic of the upcoming tour season.
I really think that it is a bright spot, and not just, you know, we're seeing warmer temperatures and we're all getting very excited. Our phones are ringing off the hook. We are actually seeing visitors come into the visitor center every day. So we are seeing, you know, a bit of an earlier traveler as well. But it's going to be good. We are worried about our May, June, but I think we've been a little worried about that the last few years. But we are seeing flat. So if we're not seeing a decrease from last year, that's a great thing because we make that up in July. But being positive, investing in marketing and partnerships are very good. If you can create strategic partnerships across the state, I would encourage you to do so.
And actually, I forgot to ask, what is the average number of visitors we see each year in Homer? Do we have a good handle on that?
So last year we saw in the visitor center over 17,000 folks. And those are your independent travelers. Well, I guess I can't say that because we do get a lot of cruise ship passengers. They go on the Homer tours and they stop at four spots across the town. So we do see an increase in that. But especially in July, we are booked. There is a no vacancy sign on the you know, as you come down the peninsula.
Great. And I want to thank all my guests for joining me in the studio. We had KBBI board member and Homer Chamber of Commerce Executive Director Debbie Speakman, Alyeska Farms and Nanilchik Charters owner Mike Flores, and on the line we had Jillian Simpson, Vice President of the Alaska Travel Industry Association. Thanks for joining me, guys. And that does it for us here at KBBI. You've been listening to The Coffee Table.